If you're here last Sunday night, you may remember that we talked about men. Well, it would make sense if we talked about males last Sunday to talk about women tonight. This is what we want to do, and there is obviously a lot more than we're going to say in a period of about 25 minutes. But I do want to touch on three basic areas. First of all, what does the Bible say about the role of women? What are a lady's responsibilities when it comes to places like the home and the church? Does the Bible have anything to say about a woman's role in society? Tonight's material can be divided into three basic headings: a woman's responsibilities, a lady's role, and women's rights. As I said, there's a lot that will not be said, but we do want to at least do kind of a basic study of these three areas. When we open up the scriptures, we find some information about a woman's responsibilities. Now, one of the texts we might not typically turn to when we think about a woman's responsibilities is in Matthew 11. It is Matthew 11, verse 11. Jesus, you may remember the words, he said, "Among them that are born of women, there is no one that's greater than John the Baptist." Generally, when people look at this particular verse, they're not thinking about the role of women. They're thinking about John the Baptist. In giving this information, though, Jesus offers some insight. And people might say, well, this is pretty basic, and that this would be true, but he still offers some insight about a woman's responsibility. God has arranged for the woman, for the female, to be the one who causes people to be brought into this world. Men have not been given the responsibility to bear children. This fact seems to suggest or imply some things. One of the things that I would infer from Matthew 11 that, you know, God has chosen for women to be the bearers of children, this implies for us that God trusts women. God is an all-powerful God, and there is probably some way that he could have, in the past, caused men to be involved in the process. He could have made the task that women now do fall upon the men. God, being who he is, surely could have come up with some way to perhaps divide this task equally. Maybe sometimes men would be responsible for it. Maybe sometimes the woman would be responsible for it. But there seems to be something special about women that God said, okay, this is going to be a responsibility, this is going to be a task, and women are going to be the ones that I charge with this task. So when we think about what Jesus stated in Matthew 11:11, it shows a woman's importance. Sometimes we are told that Christians look down on women. Christianity is a religion that's not favorably disposed towards ladies. There may be some who do this. There may be some who do not have, from a religious standpoint, a good view of the female race. But this, of course, is not the Bible view. When we think about Matthew 11:11, the population, male and female, on the planet would have died out a long time ago were it not for women. Women, without them, the world simply could not exist. When we think about Jesus coming into the world, we needed him. But how did the Lord get into the world? It was without a man's help. There was no human male involved in the process. It was all through the woman. It was the seed of woman, as the Bible describes. Another responsibility associated with ladies is also found in Matthew, this time a little later, in Matthew chapter 24. Jesus, as he's talking about in the first part of the chapter, the destruction of Jerusalem, and then beginning with about verse 36, talks about his coming at the end of time. He says this in Matthew 24:41. Once again, it's a passage that people may not necessarily associate with women, but as we think about this subject, it is a relevant verse. Two women shall be grinding at the mill. One is taken and one is left. If we were in the first century, we would have found ladies often grinding at a mill, and this wasn't something downtown. This would have been a small mill at the house that was used. This was a common household task. So when Jesus says there are two women grinding at this mill, he's saying, he's affirming that women have some responsibilities. He recognized that ladies have some domestic responsibilities. A woman should not have to do all that's done in the home. But she certainly does have some responsibilities there. In another book, Titus chapter 2, verse 5, Paul specifically says there, women are to be the keepers, or they are to be workers at home. If you back up one verse, we mentioned this morning, Titus 2, verse 4, he specifically talks about the younger ladies. The women, younger in this day and time, probably would have been under the age of 40. The ladies, Paul says, who have husbands, the ladies who have children, they are to be the keepers, they are to be the workers at home. So women, responsible for bringing children into the world, Matthew 11:11. And now Titus 2:5, Matthew 24, verse 41, we see the domestic responsibilities emphasized. When we think about ladies and what we've said so far, we find that they are involved or should be involved with some of the greatest works in the world. Not only helping our world sustain the population that it needs to continue, but involved in the training of young minds. Involved in training people who will literally be, unless the world ceases to exist, people who will be the next generation. And with our ladies, they should be the ones that are molding and shaping and guiding and influencing these young minds. Taking their children, being a good influence in the lives of others and helping them grow up spiritually. Becoming young men, young women, who are interested in and who are dedicated to serving God. So when we think about ladies, when we put what we've studied thus far together, it seems that God chose them. Because he believed that women are well positioned, rightly positioned, properly positioned to help fulfill some of the most important responsibilities in life. Now if a woman is involved in these things, it would seem to be the case that she would need to have a spiritual life. That the religious aspect of life would need to be intact in her life. Well, this is true. We do find as we look at the Bible that women have often had some strong spiritual inclinations. Not always the right spiritual inclinations, but they have often been spiritually minded. One example of this is found in the book of Acts. Acts chapter 13, verse 50. In Acts 13, 50, Luke describes some devout women. Now, as you look at the context, it does not seem that these women were devout in the right sense, but they certainly were religious. Women are like men. In that when it comes to religion, they can choose from a wide range of things in the spiritual realm. Now, there are some people, men and women, who reject spiritual things. There are others that embrace them to a limited degree. Others are very religious, but they do not embrace the truth. Ideally, a woman is going to be very religious, pious, godly, devout, and she's also going to embrace what is true. Jesus in Matthew 22 talked about loving God with all the heart, with all the soul, with all the strength, with all the mind. And a woman who does that is truly going to be a blessing to herself, to her husband, and to her family. I recently read an article in Think Magazine. It's an interesting magazine. It dedicates each month to a different topic. And in the most recent issue of Think, it was offering some information about families. One family, about midway through this journal, there was an article about a family that has what I had never heard of before, a rather interesting practice. This family goes through the Bible, and each year, 12 months in the year, for each month in the year, they pick out a particular subject. When that month comes for that particular subject, they emphasize that subject in the home. Husband talks about it, wife talks about it, and if there are children in their household, in this case, there are still kids in the household, young children, the children's attention will be directed to this Bible subject throughout that entire 30-day process. Now, as an illustration, we might say, well, the month of October is coming up. And for October, let's say that the focus is on obedience. This family says to the kids, okay, next month, October, just a few days away. And we're going to think about, throughout this next 30-day period, obedience. We're going to look at obedience from the standpoint of mom and dad, obedience to the government, obedience to school, obedience in virtually every area of life. So rather than just kind of a quick devotional, let's talk about this one night or let's talk about this over a couple of days, the children are exposed to this particular topic, an important Bible topic, for an entire month. Now we've already seen Titus 2 verse 5, that women are to be the keeper in the home. Now in this particular household, that mom is able to exert a great deal of influence. She knows dad has taken the lead in this household and mom knows that this month is the month for obedience. So as things come up in the house, mom will do her best to relate the subject of obedience to her kids, and not always in a bad way, try to offer several positive lessons. And this family, by this approach, is working to solidify 12 key lessons in the lives of their children and mom and dad, month after month. A devout woman can be very helpful in strengthening her husband and teaching her children. As I continued to read through this journal, I found something else that interested me, another story involving another family. This was written by people thinking back to their younger years. The article described the girl as a teen in high school, and it was time for a school dance. The young lady was a Christian, and there was a young man in the high school where she attended who was not a Christian. Young man thought that she was a pretty attractive young lady and went to her one day and said, "Hey, the school dance is coming up. Would you like to go?" The young lady said, "I have four things to tell you. Number one, my parents do not let me date boys. They do not know." Well, good for her. And then she said, "Number two, my parents do not know you." So regardless of what the activity would be, the answer to the question would be no. Item number three, I'm a Christian. I do not go to things, I do not participate in things like school dances. Item number four. I do believe my parents will let you go to services. If you would like to come to worship with me, I'm pretty sure that would be okay. Well, this fella thought this girl was pretty cute. And he said, well, tell you what. He said, I will go. I will attend services with you. So he went the following Sunday. Some time passed. And the two got a little chummier. They got married. Not only did both marry, the son is now a gospel, the young man is now a gospel preacher. So, in this particular set of circumstances, through the influence of mom and dad, and I think mom had a lot of influence in this particular case, she had a huge influence on her daughter, the daughter had enough power, enough willpower to say no to something that a lot of her classmates said yes to, and she also received a good thing. I don't know what the other husbands are like of the girls who went to that particular dance, but I do know that this young lady had some fine parents, and tonight, since we're emphasizing women, just as this lady found a good husband, a good wife, a good mother can also help their children do well when it comes to this time in life. And we might say the Lord ended up with a pretty good preacher because of some good parenting. Women should never forget the importance of being devout. Oftentimes, the influence that we think we're not exerting, we really are. Another responsibility that ladies have is found in 1 Timothy 2, verse 9. It's a well-known verse. It's here that Paul talked to women and said that you need to, giving this teaching through Timothy, Paul told women that they need to dress in modest clothing. Now, in our day and time, when people hear modest, it's almost always understood in the same way, and that is someone is underdressed. We see that in our society, schools have had problems with immodesty, so they're dress codes. We find that there have been immodesty issues in the workplace. So employers have said, okay, there are some basic standards, and if you do not conform to our basic standards, then you either can't work here, or you have to go home and change clothes, or you have to put something on, you have to put some additional covering on. So our world has some huge issues with the subject of modesty. Modesty certainly can, and modesty certainly does involve too little clothing. But it can also involve the opposite. In 1 Timothy 2, it does seem to involve the opposite. Just as people can underdo things, it's also possible for people to overdo things. People can be immodest because they have overdressed. As we look at what Paul says in 1 Timothy 2, there were some women who were really decked out. I mean, there were some women who were wearing too much. I think he's kind of gotten away from it, but you may remember Mr. T, as he was called. He had the gold. You usually don't see some women draped with that much gold. But people can overdress. This was something that was being done in the first century with gold and hair that was just really out of sight. There's no reason to dress like we're a walking jewelry store. There is no reason to dress in such a way where it looks like we're headed to a New York fashion show. Nothing wrong in looking nice. But we can overdress to the point where we are not modest. But there's also a need when we think about modesty to make sure that we don't underdress. There's a balance. Don't go too far in this direction. Don't go too far in this direction. Males need to work at controlling what they look at, and women can help them by dressing modestly. Just as God does not tempt people, the Bible's very clear in this point, so women have a responsibility to not tempt by immodest dress. The Bible has a lot to say about women and responsibilities. But it also, as we look at the scriptures, has a lot to say about a woman's role. When it comes to the role of women, this is a subject where the world wants to stand up and say, we've got some things to tell you. We want to talk about a lady's role. Our society over the years, going back especially to the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, our society has spent a lot of time, energy, and money talking about, let's make women equal. When people talk about equality, especially equality for women, it's important to know exactly what they mean. Because their definition of equality may not be our definition of equality. So when we think about equality for women, what do we mean? If we are talking about equality for women in the sense of things like pay and time off, we're for it. We're for it. We should believe that women, if they are doing the same work as men, or if it's comparable work, they should get the same amount of time off and they should get the same pay. We should believe that because both testaments have a principle. A New Testament expression of this principle is 1 Timothy 5, verse 18. Paul said, the laborer is worthy of his hire. Doesn't matter about the gender. You might be a male laborer, you might be a female laborer, but the laborer is worthy of his hire. So if you are willing to do the work, you should get paid regardless of your gender. If a female works outside the home, she deserves, just like the man, an appropriate wage. If men and women do the same job and they have the same skills, both should receive the same pay. If a woman has more skills than a man, it would be right. It's morally right. It's ethically right to pay her more. If a man and a woman have worked for the same company for the same amount of time, there should be equality in the way that they're treated. A man should not get more vacation time than a woman. A man should not get more break time than a woman. Again, assuming that all things are equal. Men and women are equal in many areas. But God says when it comes to a woman's role, there are also some areas in which a woman is not on the same footing as a man. I'm not going to give her name. You may be familiar with her, but there is a very prominent lady teacher who's a preacher. She apparently has her own private jet. She's got her own TV show, all kinds of books, all kinds of videos. I mean, she is really out there as far as trying to make an impact in the world. One of the questions that this woman has been asked repeatedly over the years is, why do you do what you do in light of 1 Timothy 2? And in just a moment, we're going to read 1 Timothy 2, verses 11 and 12. Her answer, or the answer from a staff, has typically been, well, God has given this lady, or if she's responding, God has given me this talent. He's given me this talent to preach, and I'm not going to squander it. I'm not going to bury my talent. If God has given me the ability to preach, I'm going to do my best worldwide to go out there and preach for God. Well, here's what Paul said. God said, let a woman learn in quietness with all subjection. But I permit not a woman to teach nor to have dominion over a man, but to be in quietness. Paul goes all the way back to Adam and Eve as he gives this particular instruction. Women have a lot of responsibility. They also have much equality in many areas. But God comes right out and says, when it comes to things like preaching and teaching, if we are in, if you will, a mixed assembly, God says the male needs to do the preaching. The male needs to do the teaching. When it comes to things like elders, there is no right, there is no role for the woman except to be the helpmeet to the husband. Paul specifically prohibits things like women preachers in 1 Timothy 2, verses 11 and 12. The kind of teaching that's described in 1 Timothy 2:12 refers, as Thayer describes it, to a didactic discourse. And that's kind of a technical way of saying something like a sermon, what the lady does that I mentioned a few moments ago. She offers didactic discourses. She preaches to mixed audiences. You can see, if you watch the TV cameras, it looks like hundreds, maybe thousands of people are there, males and females, and she is definitely the leader in this situation. Now, when people are asked, well, how can you bypass what Paul says in 1 Timothy 2:11 and 12? This is about as specific as it gets. How can you set aside these instructions? People will do what I just said. Well, God has given this woman this ability and she needs to use it. This attitude has been popular in the past. And it just seems to become increasingly popular as the years go by. Forget about what God has said. Bypass what we find in the scriptures. Just think, say, and do what we want. God, though, has specifically said there are some things that are off limits. There are some roles that a woman is not entitled to. And this is just not a woman thing. There are some things as far as males that God has not allowed men. Not every male was allowed to be a priest under the Old Testament. Not every male is allowed to serve as an elder or a deacon. There are some restrictions on men and women. So it's not that God's beating up on women. God simply says when it comes to my world and especially my church, there are some rules. And if you love me, if you respect me, if you want to please me, you have to obey the rules. You have to look at what your role is and fulfill it. Paul was not only clear here, he was clear in the Corinthian letter. 1 Corinthians 14, verse 34, he said, let women keep silent in the church. This statement is made in the context of the first century spiritual gifts, and it makes the point even more emphatic. Spiritual gifts were, at least in some congregations, a very significant part of what was done. Now, we know God didn't discriminate against women. Some will say, well, don't you know that women had spiritual gifts? I know that. I'm familiar with Acts 4, or Acts 21, verse 9. That passage says that Philip had four daughters. They had the spiritual gift of prophecy. But 1 Corinthians 14 says, yes, they have the gifts. But there are some rules, there are some restrictions on how they use those gifts. When it comes to a time of preaching and teaching, men are present, God says no. And that's the final word. A woman, as she is to be subject to her husband, Ephesians 5, 22 to 24, there is also some subjection for her when it comes to spiritual things in the church. In addition to having some important responsibilities and fulfilling some important roles, women also have some rights. Now, our world I kind of smile sometimes. The world likes to talk about women's rights and act like this has arisen in the last 50 years, that people 100 years ago didn't know anything, they were clueless about women's rights. May I suggest, though, that long before America was created, God was speaking up about and for women's rights? A long time ago, God said that a woman has a right to become a Christian. As with men, God has given the female race free will when it comes to spiritual things. Ideally, a woman will choose, what we talked about earlier, she'll choose to be that devout woman, choose to exercise her spiritual right and be faithfully involved, fully committed to God. God has now thrown open the door all the way to women when it comes to being one of his people. Now, as we look at some other religious groups and ideas in the world, we find that some have emphasized how great heaven is going to be for the male. There are some religious groups that if you're a guy, I mean, heaven is going to be paradise for you, but, well, if you're a female, sorry. You're not only going to be a second-class citizen, you're not going to be really any citizen in the afterlife. But this message is not the message found in the Scriptures. When it comes to God's blessings for his people, God says you can have different roles. But as far as my blessings for you, whether you are a male, whether you are a female, whether you are young, whether you are old, whether you are married, whether you are unmarried, he says it does not matter. You might live in a third world country. You might live in the most prosperous nation. God says the spiritual blessings for you, if you will fulfill your roles, fulfill your responsibilities, they can be equal. Now, in what the world thinks of as Christianity, the status of women is often taken for granted. Well, yes, there's a lot of equality there. But we do not have to go back too far in history to find out that this has not always been how things were in the past. You may remember, if you've done some reading as far as history, that in the past women were expected to follow the religion of the husband. They may not have believed that way. It may not have made sense to them, but, well, the husband, you just do what he does, and even in the area of religion, you follow him. It's not been all that long ago that women were not allowed to vote. There have been places where women have not been allowed to drive. Women, in many respects, as we look at time, have been treated as second-class citizens. But God has said for more than 2,000 years, this is not how things work in the kingdom of God. An example. Back in the book of John, chapter 4, verse 27, we have the account of Jesus and his meeting with the Samaritan woman. The Lord's disciples had gone away to buy some bread. John 4:27 says that as they got back, they looked at what Jesus was doing. They saw him talking to someone they didn't know. And the person the Lord was talking to was a woman. The Bible says these disciples marveled. They were stunned. They were shocked. Why would you be talking to a woman? Jesus shook some things up. He changed the thinking of some people during his earthly ministry. He left absolutely no doubt that women are important. They were so important that Luke, I believe it's Luke 8 verses 1 through 3, says that Jesus actually took some women and made them part of his group. Jesus said, I have room for you. You want to be one of my disciples? Come on in. I will welcome you just as much as I welcome men. Now, they had different roles, different functions. Not every male was an apostle. So the fact that roles are different does not mean that someone is somehow less important. In fact, I would be so bold to say that there are some women, some Christian women, who are far better Christians than some males. And this has also been true for a long, long time. Throughout the world, as we look at society, we find that there have been some places, some clubs that have been specifically designed for males. I mean, you have to be a guy to be here. God could have designed heaven in this way. God could have said, okay, we have males and we have females. If you're a man, we're going to put you up here in the upper section. You get the best. And if you're a woman, well, okay, we'll let you in. But you're going to get this lower section. We're not going to let you have the greatest and the best. But God says when it comes to women, there are no second-class citizens. Different roles, different responsibilities. But God says, if you will fulfill your role, if you will fulfill your responsibilities, you will be on the same par, on the same level as males. That's good news. Under the Old Testament, we mentioned that not every male could become a priest. But now with the New Testament system, God has said, if you're a man, you can become a priest. If you're a woman, you can also become a priest. Males and females. When women understand their responsibilities and the roles and the rights, when they exercise those rights, God is pleased. God's honored. Tonight, we hope that if you're a lady, you have at least some understanding of the responsibilities and the roles. We also hope that you're someone who understands the great right that you have in this day and time. You can be a child of God in a sense, in a way that is absolutely equal to to what men possess. That's a great, great blessing, great, great honor. How sad to go through life and to have access to everything that God has to offer and not take advantage of it. Same can also be said for males. Now each one can become a priest. Now each one can serve God to the fullest possible degree. But once again, we have to know our role. We have to be willing to take up our spiritual responsibilities. And we have to act on what God has given us. Tonight we trust that because you're here, you're someone who wants to know what's right. You're someone who wants to do what's right. And we trust you're someone who has done what's necessary to please God. If you've not become a Christian in the way that the Bible describes, faith, repentance, confession, baptism, tonight you can take those steps and be one of His children. You can leave this building knowing that you're in Christ, your sins are forgiven, and that you are, if you will, a first-class citizen in God's kingdom. If you have been one of God's people in the past, and for some reason you've looked at your role and said, I'm not that interested in being a Christian, you've shirked some of your spiritual responsibilities. We don't know how many more days we'll have. We don't know how many more opportunities God will give us to change our life. But we do know that there is at least one. And that one chance, that one opportunity is now. If we're not in a right relationship with God, there's no guarantee we're going to make it home tonight. No guarantee that tomorrow is going to come. If we're not fulfilling our roles and responsibilities, let's consider that as we sing the invitation song. And if you need help, let us know how we can aid you as Jeff leads us in this hymn.